The crux of the problem was is that I felt like all that was promised on these pages of scripture that I'd been learning about for all these years, like I wasn't actually getting to like live into the fulfillment of it. And honestly, I felt like I was getting worse instead of better.
Welcome to Formation Conversations, a podcast of the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona. We're having an ongoing conversation with friends about what it means to be formed into the image of Christ. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome to the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona podcast. We call it Formation Conversations. I'm Ted Wiestey, the director of the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona.
And I'm Gray Ewing. I am the senior pastor at Ascension Church of Phoenix, Presbyterian Church here in the Central Phoenix area. And my brief notes here say that I'm an amazing, all-around amazing guy. I didn't write that.
I'm glad. I was thinking you were going to ignore that, so I'm glad that you said it. Yes.
Well, you just pointed to it, so I had to then go there.
Yeah, you are an all-around amazing guy, I think.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah.
What a privilege to know you and to be on this podcast.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. You know, our heart with this, over the last six seasons, can you believe we've led it for six seasons, is to have conversations that center around formation. And really, because one of the things that we began to notice was that the thing we enjoyed most was having conversations with other people, whether it's people that are new to us or old friends that we can just hang out and have a conversation and then introduce people to our listeners, those millions, possibly tens of millions of listeners that we have.
That's right. Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, we made a shift kind of from content driven to people driven because we realized like people couldn't be put into boxes and the things that people were saying didn't really fit in theme, but there was just so many golden nuggets, you know, that were being given to us. Might as well just talk to the person, right? And figure out what their heart is.
Yeah, that's what we want to do. And so here we are in season six, a little bit rebranded Formation Conversations. And if you've been following it along, you'll realize we haven't posted a podcast in a little while. We have had some technical issues that we believe are all fixed now with our podcasting. And also just our schedules have been quite full this spring. But here we are. I believe this is episode four, I think. We're back with another conversation. And today with my really good friend, actually, Sherry Hudspeth. Sherry, welcome.
Hi, Ted. Hi, Gray. It's great to be here with you.
And nice to meet you, in my case.
Well, and Sherry, we've known each other, I think, for 12 or 13 years. We first met when our cohorts going through spiritual formation training overlapped. I think that's when we first met.
Actually, when we first met was when you invited me to come to your church to introduce you to life with God more fully than what was on the website. And then I got surprised by going to the next CELA cohort, and there you were.
That's right, because that would have been like spring of 2012 that you came over. That's right. I didn't remember the sequencing of that, but of course, because that was at our church in Texas, and then we moved to Arizona just 4 or 5 months later, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's been fun to journey with you, and now we get to serve together with CELA, training spiritual directors, which is one of my favorite things we get to do.
Yeah, me too. It's a great team, and it's just incredible to get to walk alongside people who are training to be directors.
Maybe you should say something about what CELA is, too, for those who might not know.
Yeah, well, CELA is a two-year training program in spiritual direction. It's residential in that there are five in-person residencies over that two-year period with things happening in between those different residencies. But it's a wonderful, transformative experience of being trained to be a spiritual director. So, yeah.
And since I'm just getting to know you, Sherry, what is your role at CELA? And are you also a spiritual director in practice as well?
I'm a spiritual director. I finished my training at CELA in 2013. And then in 2015, CELA West, which is what Ted's talking about, that meets in Phoenix, the Phoenix area, began. And I was invited to become a supervisor. So I walk alongside, we call them interns that are going through the process, meeting with them every other month or so over the 2 year period of time. And then when I'm actually at the gatherings, part of what I get to do is just have conversations around what, you know, they're learning and noticing, and like be with people in that. And then also we do like practicum practice type stuff in the evening. So sometimes I guide some of those practice times.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Well, as our longtime listeners know, and if you're not a longtime listener, we usually have something to eat on the podcast. And we used to like do a full meal, and it was kind of, they got a little obnoxious at times probably. And we had to start realizing we can't eat while we're doing the podcast because people don't want to hear us slurp and chew and whatever else might happen when we're eating. But we do want to kind of carry that tradition on where there's a snack or something we're drinking or whatever. So Sherry, as a way to just get to know you a little bit better, what are you drinking or eating today?
Well, I had to look up how to say this. It's spelled B-A-I and it's Bai is the brand. And they come out with Zambia Bing Cherry, which I'm very excited about. And I only found this like 3 weeks ago. So it's my like new favorite.
I would have said Bai as the pronunciation all day long.
I'm going to go next, if you don't mind, because it's in steam with cherry.
Ah.
So I am drinking just Starbucks, but it is the iced cherry chai from Starbucks. And it's pretty much a girly drink, you know, for me to be drinking, but it's amazing. And here's the story with chai with me. I have always said, literally for decades, I have said I do not like chai. It's just one of those things from my teen years or something like that. I maybe had a bad experience or something.
Probably your Mississippi upbringing.
Yeah. You know? There's not a lot of chai in Mississippi. And so just people would say like, I love chai. And I would always be like, I don't like chai. And for just forever. I mean, it was just like part of my identity. A few weeks ago in the Starbucks drive-thru line, I saw this new drink, the cherry chai iced coffee or iced drink. I just ordered it. And I have no idea why. Just the Lord, the clouds broke open. The Shekinah glory cloud rested over me. And he spoke to me and he said, just order this, this drink. And I have no idea why I did, because I identified as someone who didn't like chai and I loved it. So this is like the fifth or sixth time I've gotten this drink. It's pink and, but you know, I order it with confidence.
It's really cute.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. A little cherry candies on the top. And so apparently I like chai now.
You're a chai guy.
You have to try it. Is it new?
Yeah, it's new. It's like advertised everywhere on their signs and everything. It's delicious.
Well, you have to go try it there in DFW. Although sometimes Starbucks does things regionally, you know, and
true.
Yeah. Texans might not be up for the cherry chai. Who knows? Well, hey, so what I have, I brought, and you're welcome to try if you'd like, but I have, well, I'm not going to eat it just yet, but coffee cake snickerdoodles or snickerdoodle coffee cake. I don't quite understand, but they're kind of cookies, but it's like coffee cake, snickerdoodle, cookie, something.
Mm-hmm.
But yesterday, Cinco de Mayo, and my son Trey is a chef, but he had the day off. So he decided to make a feast for us. And I mean, I think I went to bed last night with a stomach ache, to be honest, because the food was so good. He cooked for like 3 hours yesterday.
Mm.
And I mean, he grilled this chicken that then he put some kind of like garlic butter on, and it was over the top. But he made churro Rice Krispie treats, which, you know, Cinco de Mayo, it's so good. And then I don't know how this exactly related to Cinco de Mayo, but he made these coffee cake snickerdoodle cookies and they're really good.
All right. And there's two here. Sherry's not with us in person. So Sharon
in spirit. All right, friends, we're going to have these snacks for just a minute, and then we'll come back on the air. But we'll see you in just a minute. Hey everybody, welcome back. We're back from our little break, enjoying our treats, amazing coffee cake slash cookie things that Trey made for us. And I hope you enjoyed your time as well, Sherry. And yeah, just so happy to be talking together in this moment and to share some time together.
Yeah, and Sherry, I just want, because I've known you for so long and love you so much, I love for our listeners just to get to know a little bit about you. And so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so I have lived in Texas since I came here for college. I've had the opportunity to go off to a couple different places along the way. We lived in Southern California for 4 years, and then we lived up in Wisconsin for a couple of years. Grew up in Kansas and Colorado, so I actually love that I've gotten to experience like a lot of different parts of the United States. That's also a hard part of my story. Like, it's a mixed bag. Like, moving around a lot, you know, comes with its challenges and, you know, things that go along with that as well. I call myself a Protestant mutt. I grew up in a family that moved around quite a bit, and my dad's way of finding a new church in small town Kansas or Colorado was, you know, he's teaching from the Bible versus teaching from the newspaper was how he liked to think about it. Yeah, I've experienced being in a Methodist church and Friends church and Episcopal church, and Pentecostal environments, in high school and college, and then went away to Laterna University in East Texas, to study accounting. And that school was, birthed out of the Christian Missionary Alliance families that started the school, but they really wanted it to be a place where all Protestants, you know, were welcome. So a lot of different theological perspectives were taught there. So that gives you a little bit of history of like where I'm from and like what my spiritual background is like.
Well, tell us a little bit about family.
Yeah. So, I'm actually recently widowed. I've been widowed for a year. Married to Dave for 36 years before he passed away. We have a son named Matt. Matt is married to our daughter-in-law Jordan, and I have a granddaughter who's Carson, who's 4.5 years old, and as most grandparents say, like, it's an amazing role to be a grandparent now. It's so joyful, and it's so, like, to get to watch her grow without the pressure and responsibility of parenting has just been an incredible gift.
It's so beautiful. You know, you're a director of a spiritual formation ministry by being a part of CELA. One doesn't just usually fall into those roles. There's probably some part of your story, which I'm not familiar with, that caused you to want to be interested in a more intentional kind of life with God. Maybe you could share a little bit of that journey going from mutt, as you called it, right? Protestant mutt, to a more intentional life with God kind of approach.
Yeah, no, it's really true. Like, especially being a spiritual director, right? Like, growing up in small town Kansas and Colorado, one does not dream of becoming a spiritual director one day. It's not on the radar of possibilities. So it has been quite the journey. I would say like a real pivotal point for me, I grew up in a family who, going back for generations, have followed Christ. So it was very rooted and grounded, you know, in a faith, a long held faith. And very responsive to it as a young girl. I was very open to faith. But in my mid-30s, I have what I've called a spiritual midlife crisis. I think, you know, we call it deconstruction, you know, at this point. But well, essentially what was going on for me is that I had been so faithful to invest in being a part of the church, engaged with, you know, people, in a very willing way. I loved learning about the scriptures. I loved community life in the body of Christ. I mean, there really wasn't anything that was hard for me to embrace all the way through my childhood and into my early adulthood. And is even embraced as a leader. Like, people appreciated who Dave and I were as young people and wanted to invest in us as leaders. So we were taking on leadership roles early. And the crux of the problem was, is that I felt like all that was promised on these pages of scripture that I'd been learning about for all these years, like, I wasn't actually getting to like live into the fulfillment of it. And honestly, I felt like I was getting worse instead of better. I felt like I felt very judgmental. I felt self-righteous. I felt confused about like why this investment and all this wasn't like turning into something that was supposed to be amazing. And I was very restless in literally every area of my life, as a wife, as a mother. I was a CPA. I did that part-time, invested in leadership roles at church. And there literally was an area of my life that I wasn't restless. And in that time period, I had what I experienced as my first invitation from the Lord, where I sensed the Lord was wanting something. It happened because my friend Jody and I were praying through the 1 year Bible together, and Sabbath appears very early on in the scriptures as a concept. And the Lord just kept inviting me into practicing Sabbath. And I was like, we don't do that. That's an Old Testament thing. Like, I had all these like reasons that came out of my, you know, cultural norm in the Christian faith. And I remember at one point, I mean, this went on for months and months. And I remember like being like, fine, I'll do it. Like, if it'll make the conversation go away, you know, thinking that maybe it was like a 1 or 2 Sunday kind of thing. And it was it's never ended. Like, you know, that's 20 something years ago. And it was the beginning of the Lord inviting me into an interactive relationship instead of a learning about Him relationship.
So Sherry, thank you for sharing about just what the journey has looked like for you, how you got from being part-time CPA to full-time spiritual director. What would you say has shaped you the most? What's been most significant along the way? What has God used to form you?
Yeah. I would say that 2 things come to mind immediately. I'm reading books by spiritual formation authors. Like, it hasn't been just reading for information. It's just an uncanny, canny, spirit-led, like, put the next book in front of me kind of experience, where it's like, wow, like, this is what I'm needing named. I'm needing to be able to have a conversation with you, Lord, that like helps me understand a little bit of what's going on. Cause I feel like, you know, the spiritual journey, so often you're like on the front edge of something new. And that's where authors have really stepped in and been super helpful for me. And then I think the other practice has been to journal my prayers. I'm an out loud processor. And so it's a way for me to be an out loud processor, so to speak, you know, with the Lord. And then also, over time, I've learned the value of listening and making space for the listening. So, you know, pausing in the journaling and receiving what I sense is coming, from the Lord. And then I think, probably practicing things like Lectio Divina in community has also been a really important thing. Cause I, because of the background that I had with being so intensely involved in studying the Word, and that didn't land in a relational place with the Lord, that I felt like the Lord was like attracting me towards. There was an era in there where studying scripture was rough. Like it was just really hard for me to connect with the Lord through scripture study. And so praying the scriptures in community and noticing the Lord that way was a really significant thing as well.
We haven't talked a ton about the value of spiritual reading on this podcast, first thing you said, but that is significant for many people. I remember the first time I actually read something and did the study questions at the end of the chapter, like actually slowed down enough to do that. Like, cause I don't think I'd ever done that before. Something gripped me at some point and said, well, that's what these are here for. Like, why do you think you don't need to like slow down and evaluate this?
Right.
And of course, if we're reading like Ignatius or something like that, we don't always have the study questions, but it can be very significant reading for formation rather than reading for information or for, you know, tools to use or whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, concepts like belovedness, like reading authors that had been on a journey where they had discovered their belovedness and even the struggle of that and, you know, how that looked like for them, like opened up a conversation with the Lord around that for myself. And that, you know, and that one's been a very long conversation. Like I've circled around back to that one. Like I would have these like moments with the Lord that were so profound around belovedness, kind of anticipating, oh, now we've gotten there. You know, it's like, well, we're going to circle here again. And so, something that happened for me in the direction training process is I was introduced to the spiritual exercises in St. Ignatius of Loyola. And so when I finished, the training, I was also on a team of people at Grafted Life Ministries who had been very formed by that and their spiritual formation master's program that they've been a part of. So I at that point was in 2012. And so just multiple times the Lord has led me back into participating in the exercises as a part of developing a relationship with the Lord. And so at this point I've been doing it so much. I really, woke up, 18 months ago at some point. It's like, oh my gosh, I like have Ignatian spirituality is like my way of like being in the world. And that is definitely not something I ever saw, you know, coming as a, you know, young Protestant, following Jesus. But I'm so glad. I mean, I couldn't be more grateful.
It's not all the rage in Dallas, Texas to do Ignatius exercises.
It is not all the rage, but it's kind of shocking how many people are becoming attracted.
Starting to grow, yeah.
Well, for those who aren't familiar, when you use the phrase or the term Ignatian spirituality, how would you define Ignatian spirituality in a few sentences? And then what are the Ignatian exercises in particular?
Yeah, how I would define it in a few sentences are, you know, beginning the day and the loving gaze of God, like being on the journey to discover how that happens for you. I think it's a very personal journey for people. It's learning to notice what's standing out in the scriptures that you have in front of you for that day that leads you to desire the experience of grace in a specific way. And asking the Lord for that. And then journaling about it, having some kind of a closing prayer that marks the end of that time. And then also at the end of the day, prayer of examine is often something that people are familiar with. And it's a reflecting back with the Lord on the day, what stands out as significant in the journey with the Lord, the journey with other people, the journey with your own heart. And attending to that with the Lord, and then also spending some time just noticing the graces, noticing what you're grateful for as well in a heartfelt kind of way. I had a practice early on of like keeping a gratitude journal, but for a long time that stayed a very heady exercise for me. I just didn't have the capacity to really go into my heart around Thanksgiving. And so practicing the prayer of examine has really helped that to become a heart level practice.
And if someone is listening to this and they just like, where do I start with that? Like, there's more and more resources available these days, but like, do you have a go-to that you say, like, here's where you would go, or a video to watch or a book to read? Or
actually, I've been introduced to a book called Finding God in All Things, and we'll have to look up the author. I think it's William Barry, but I'm not 100% sure about that. Maybe you could include that in the notes. But he goes through, it's like 10 pages per chapter. He just goes through all the different aspects of the spiritual exercises and what they're meant to contribute to your relationship, you know, with the Lord. So I think that's one of the best like intros too that I've run across. And then I have experienced three different versions of going through the spiritual exercises, Larry Warner's version of it, Father Tetlow's version of it. And then my ministry partner, Lori Schultz, has collated one that's called the Ignatian Journey that I guide people through currently. So yeah, there's lots of options out there for, because basically, you know, started in the 1500s. So there's been all this like interpreting, you know, what Ignatius first encountered along the way that's gone on over the generations. And so in our modern era, and with people really liking to interpret and create, right? So we live in a time that's wealthy with options for how to go through the exercises. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Well, I just looked it up and yeah, it's William Barry, Finding God in All Things. Mm-hmm. So, and generally with the Ignatian exercises, the invitation is to go through them with a listener, and quite often a spiritual director is the perfect kind of venue for that. Can you tell us more about what you do personally in offering the exercises to people?
Yeah. So, I have a mentor by the name of Sybil Towner, was all about flexibility and all about like, there's many ways to do things. And so and that really fits my personality as well. I love variety. So, we have a cohort version of going through it, which is you meet four times over the 9 months in person for a couple of days. And then in between times you go through with a small group of three people that you're meeting every 2 weeks. And so the direction guidance happens in the cohort in-person part, and then your peer working through it together every 2 weeks. And then we have small groups that meet online for the 9 months, and I meet with them every 2 weeks as well for that. It's a 32-week process, so 16 times. A maximum, we do four in those groups. We really like to do two or three. So it's a really small group of people that are really feel called into it and committed to the process of doing this with one another. And then also the traditional route is to do it one-on-one with directee director relationship. And so I also do that for people who are needing the space, especially to not kind of stay on track with the every 2 week rhythm, but are really needing the space to follow the Lord, maybe at a slower pace than that. They sense that's what they're being invited into. And so participating in a group isn't a great fit for them.
And what is it that people are generally identifying? Like when you hear them speak about what they're struggling with and you think Ignatian exercises would really help with that. Like, what are some of the themes that you, because it's more than one thing, I'm sure, but what are some of the burdens that people are bringing in that you think this practice really helps alleviate?
I think one of the things is they have a sense that there is more possible in their relationship with the Lord, but the, like, whatever it is that they're participating in, the practices, their rule of life, is just doesn't seem to be satisfying that sense. And a lot of times that is connected to like an invitation around belovedness. It just isn't sorted out yet with the Lord. And there's this invitation to come back into that conversation, because part of the tradition of going through the exercises. There's something called the preparatory exercises that is all about belovedness, and that's in discerning whether or not the Lord's inviting me into this process. And then I would also say that a lot of us feel pretty stuck in our sin patterns and don't really understand why, even having been attentive to it for, you know, a significant amount of time, we're still really stuck. And a part of what the exercises invite you into is just really honest conversations with a God who is full of grace and love for you and really does want you to be free of those things and wants to have a relationship with you where that's not in the way. And also doesn't want to overwhelm you with addressing everything, like has one or two things that we're maybe going to pay attention to. Time. And so I think a lot of people need to experience the shepherding of that in like an extended kind of time period is one of the reasons why people are called into it. And then I think a third reason I would say is that it's just an incredible opportunity to get to know Jesus. You spend a lot of weeks in the life of Jesus, and then time during the Lent season focused on the Holy Week experience that Jesus had and entering into that with the Lord and being shaped by what did Jesus care about? What did he trust the Father with? Really being invited to attend to that, where you're watching Jesus, but then you're noticing how you're responding to that or you're resisting it. And being honest with the Lord about that and staying in that conversation and that way of life of being attentive in that way with the Lord is the other reason why I think people are drawn into it.
Mm. Well, I want to finish our time together with one question that we've started to really enjoy asking people. And the question is, if you could say something to your 25-year-old self, what would you say?
Still out. Like, you're too intense. You have to have a plan. Like, it's just, it's going to turn out to be way different than you expect. And, but you're also going to discover way more than you could possibly imagine about who you are, what God has for you, who the Lord is for you. Like the reasons why you're stressing out about stuff, you're going to be on a journey where, the Lord's going to help you to let go of a lot of things you think you need to hang on to and manage.
It's good.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of shepherding that happens at that stage. I feel like to me when you're dealing with expectations not met, which I think is almost a universal experience, you know, just think of someone coming out of college and ready to tackle the world, you know, and that's developmental too, right? That's good that we have those things that fuel us towards, I think Ronald Rollheiser talks about that in one of his books, how we need that I can change the world mentality for a certain stage of development. But then when you face reality and your life doesn't go the way you want it to, or that you can't control, you know, what's there to shepherd you at that moment towards, actually, this is developmental too. This is good too, to recognize your limits and to recognize your lack of control and those things.
That's really true, Gray. I mean, when I first started to, you know, really have a lot of doubts about faith, doubts about how to live this out in my mid-30s, I really didn't have anyone around me that knew what to do with doubt, that knew what to do with disappointment about like the journey of being a Christian. And I am so grateful that that's not the case anymore. I mean, we really, as a Christian culture, I think Spirit-led, there's been more and more necessity for there to be people who know how to have that conversation because more and more people are having it. But I really do... I'm so grateful that the Lord has prepared me to walk alongside people in the way that I was needing to have someone walk alongside me when the disillusionment and the questions were beginning to form.
Yeah, that's so helpful. You know, as you talk about doubt and disappointment, I think if we're seeking to follow Christ and we don't experience doubt or disappointment, we're probably not paying attention right. to what's going on in our hearts, what's going on around us, and to have someone normalize it mm-hmm. and make it safe to just say, I have doubts, or I'm disappointed, or I'm scared.
Right.
I think for many of us, we grew up in traditions where you kind of had to act like you had it all together, or at least you felt like you did. And some of that's youth. But some of that is just having people who name things and give permission. And that even, I think, ties back to some of what you were saying about reading some of these various writers who help name things that you're experiencing. Mm-hmm. Well, anything else, Sherry, before we close up shop for the day?
Mm-hmm. No, thank you so much for inviting me to have this conversation, Ted. I'm so grateful for your friendship. You know, we've gotten to journey through so much of life together over the last 13 years, and to watch God do more than we were expecting and to go deeper than we were expecting. And I mean, all the things. And so thank you for introducing me to Gray and giving me the opportunity to be with you all today.
It's a joy to meet you, Sherry. Thank you for spending your time with us. And I do want to say to the person who may be listening to this, that may be exactly where we've been describing, you know, what do you do when you're going through that season of disappointment, doubt, despair, and you may wonder who's going to shepherd me through this. There are resources out there. There's spiritual directors like Sherry. And, you might want to go to the Spiritual Formation Society of Arizona's website and find a spiritual director, or find maybe just a soul care day to go to, or a silent retreat or something like that. Start the process of kind of asking some of these questions and going deeper. There are people out there who can help with the journey.
Yeah. Amen. So you can check us out at sfsaz.org. And Sherry, the website where people would connect with you is thepracticecollective.org?
It's practicecollective.org.
Okay, no V. It's just practicecollective.org.
That's right.
Perfect.
Well, no definite article needed.
Well, thank you for joining us, Sherry, and thanks, listeners, for joining us. We're excited to be back with you again and look forward to next time. Until then, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.